I'm told by Craig with his spiffy haircut that my next guest is on the line. I just want to set the scene as to why we're having this discussion. Out of all the newspapers in the world that I came across an article from the Times of India, and they spoke about the fact that Mackenzie Scott and Melinda Gates are transforming philanthropy. They've donated between them $28 billion to various causes. That got me thinking about the importance of philanthropy, to what extent maybe it's changing, and does South Africa kind of reflect what's happening in terms of trends in the rest of the world? And if there's time, we'll talk about the Jewish community as well. But clearly, the one man who is best placed to talk to all these issues is Mark Lubner, the Group CEO of Africa Tikkun. So let's have the discussion. Mark Lubner, thank you for being with me on Chai FM.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you wanting to listen and your listeners wanting to listen to some of the thoughts that I've got.
And just apropos absolutely nothing, somebody pointed you out to me at Nine Yards on the weekend. I was walking over to introduce myself, and then somebody chapped you, and I lost my opportunity. So next time I will certainly do better. But yeah, it would have been great had I met you prior
to this. Please, touch me for a coffee.
There you go.
Great coffee. There. So please, just touch me next time for a coffee. It'll be a pleasure.
There you go. So $28 billion donated by two areas. I mean, it's pretty astounding. They are massive amounts. They're purpose-driven donations. What's your take when you hear something like that? Does it mean that philanthropy is evolving, that it's different to what it was? What are we witnessing with a donation of $28 billion?
No, I think what you're seeing, and I'll put those sort of significant sums, to one side, because they're rarities. They're not everyday occurrences. I mean,
sure.
What I call clever money, Bill Gates type money, Warren Buffett type money, typically is being given an increasingly more and more for what I call outcome-based results. In the old days, it was good enough if you had a program or a project that really called on heartstrings, poor, starving black kids in townships.
Yes.
That no longer rings true any longer. Because there's a general mindset that says, certainly from the South African context, well, by now, some 30 years since apartheid, by now, surely the government and the South African population should no longer have starving kids in townships. And that might well be an appropriate statement to make, but the reality of it is there are kids who are going malnourished in township communities, because we have a society that is not creating sufficient jobs, that's not necessarily creating that multiplier spend effect within impoverished environments. If you had at least one parent earning, that would have been enough to sustain a family. But when that one parent is now retrenched, how does that family survive just on government grants? Sorry, so to answer your question a long way around, big sums, and we were very fortunate recipients of a Mackenzie Scott grant about 10 odd years ago, of a substantial sum of money. And it's an interesting scenario, because what ended up happening is we took a 10-year view on the use of those monies.
Yeah.
So we built programs and projects with the anticipation that over the 10 years, we would ultimately be able to start programs, because the money was given to us specifically not to fund existing activities, but to spur new initiatives. And we took a view that over the years, we'll find replacement donors. So what we did is we took their money, we implemented it, we accounted for every penny, it was well spent. But then as that money dissipated, so we were not that successful in finding local replacements for that international funding.
Hmm.
And then we got stuck with a situation where we had started programs in these various township communities, and we didn't necessarily have the same amount of funding to resource these programs. And an interesting thing, when you start programs within a township community, they so often had programs that start and then people let them down and they drop out and stuff like that. The only way you build a reputation is through sustainable action.
Sure,
sustainable action. So from a reputational point of view, it's been key critical. And what we've had to do is just box a lot smarter, reduce our costs, reduce our overheads, still get the same outcome with a lot less money necessarily coming in. But there is obviously a point of inflection And I'm afraid we're reaching that sort of point at the moment where that Mackenzie Scott money, as fantastic as it was, in retrospect, if I had the opportunity, had I been able to put it into an endowment and just live off the interest.
Yes.
But one of the prerequisites that they had was that that money had to be spent on new programs, new projects. So we had to spend the capital.
It's just, it's fascinating. I came across an article. I'm just trying to, I really hope my memory doesn't let me down here, but I think I read it about 4 or 5 days ago. The two founders of Canva have, I think, given $150 million to, I don't know, certain populations in Malawi, but there are no strings attached at all. They're literally just putting the amounts in their bank accounts, whatever bank accounts they may or may not have. And they've said that the results from donations like that are pretty astounding in that people know what they want to do best with those funds. And I find that really fascinating in terms of turning the idea of philanthropy on its head.
Well, you see, again, it's a hybrid. I think that I don't support just this, I almost want to call it unqualified distribution of cash, just giveaway. And I'll explain to you why. Because invariably, fallouts take place between people in all aspects of life when expectations are not met. So if you have an expectation from me and I don't understand that expectation to begin with, the likelihood is that I'm going to disappoint you somewhere along the way. We can avoid that. And I'm not suggesting that NGOs, MPOs should necessarily simply jump when a donor says, this is what I want. I do believe that there needs to be, however, not only accountability for how the money gets spent, but right up front, if I'm coming to you and I'm giving you a dollar, you should ask me, what do you want that dollar spent on? Because in line with what I do, this is what I can deliver on. Rather than me simply saying, okay, I'll take a dollar from you simply because I want that extra dollar, and then find I'm having to constantly chase after new initiatives, simply on a donor behest. I would rather say, within the framework of what I do, this is what I can do with that dollar, and have that agreed in some form of agreements or an exchange. It doesn't need to be a formal agreement. It could all be just an informal exchange of emails. As happened with ourselves, for argument's sake, in the early part of the relationship with Mackenzie Scott. So I think that understanding, the common understanding between parties, prevents necessarily disappointments and fallouts later. Also, if I know what a donor is giving me funds for and the donor knows I'm going to spend that money, the likelihood is that if I meet the objectives, if I meet the outcome objectives, that donor is going to continue to support me.
Sure, makes sense. Yeah. That makes a whole bunch of sense to me.
So there's a responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in the commercial world. In the commercial world, you know, you develop a product or a service and you sell it. In this non-for-profit world, it's highly complex, and relationships are key critical. You are, in fact, selling ultimately at the end of the day a relationship rather than necessarily only an outcome. So particularly in this particular field, trust, integrity are key vital ingredients to success.
I want to bring this home a little bit. I want to talk about these issues in the context of South Africa and within the Jewish community in particular. And it's just, you know, kind of funny. You go back, you think about sitting around the Friday night table and your grandparents discussing, I don't know, tzedakah. You can't avoid these things. Chesed, communal responsibility. Wow. These things are really, for want of a better word, they're baked into our DNA. But our community is getting smaller and smaller. And I would imagine the need is getting bigger and bigger. How's this playing out in a community that is shrinking, this obligation to give and provide and support?
Huge challenges. And, you know, as we know, there's been a massive brain drain out of the country. And I want to express a view sort of about emigration in two ways. Mm. There are those that have emigrated and left with money and now are building lives for themselves elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then those that have left without being able necessarily to still contribute back here because they need every penny to build their new lifestyles abroad. And that has impacted on organizations like the Chevra Kadisha materially, because they are still the ward of those that are in need from within our community. So the reliance on them to raise funds increases as each individual who leaves the country leaves and doesn't leave anything behind. The burden also on those of us who remain behind, gets greater and greater every year. And in an environment where many of our businesses are not necessarily growing, you can appreciate the stretch. And there's massive donor apathy, not even apathy.
Fatigue.
There's been fatigue. Yeah. The South African community, and in particular the Jewish community, is extraordinary. I don't know too many communities anywhere in the world. And I'm not suggesting that they all give to Africa Tikkun. At times that's even quite contentious, because I get a lot of flack for saying, well, you're taking money out of the Jewish community's coffers and putting it into black township communities. Sorry, I'm just distracted.
No, we're going to get there. We're going to get there in a moment or two.
You know, my argument is I'm doing it on behalf of the Jewish community, so the Jewish community is seen to truly be living the principles of chesed across broader than just our own community framework.
Yes.
And I do think that, you know, we are obliged to be a light unto the nations. So not just a light within our own community, we have to be a light to all nations.
What is that?
So therefore giving and contributing. You know.
If I'm only for myself, what am I? You know, powerful things, part of our tradition. So I want to talk about that aspect of you stepping out of the community, because you spent decades representing a Jewish organization, a country where identity, politics, and perception, they're always part of the mix. What's it like as a Jewish organization in a non-Jewish environment? Does it make it more difficult?
Frank answers in it hasn't been for, you know, I've been at Tikkun now for over 21 years, and I can honestly say I never came across any elements of anti-Semitism up until
October 7th, I would imagine.
Post October 7th, most definitely there have been a lot of organizations that have chosen to say, well, you know, our client base, our customers, would not be thrilled. One of my roles is chairman of the South African Israel Chamber of Commerce, for argument's sake. And for years, a number of the programs that we ran there, which were oriented towards bringing Israeli tech to South Africa for the benefit of South Africans, mind you, which government would be supportive of, no longer supportive of, simply because the tech comes out of Israel. Similarly with Africa Tikkun, we've had no doubt a backlash, maybe not as direct as people saying to us, corporate sectors, well, because there is Jewish-led concern that we're not going to support you. But certainly there have been a couple of corporates who were sizable contributors that have chosen, for whatever their reasons are, surprisingly after 10, 15 years of backing us, to, for no reason given, say, no, sorry, not this year. I'll tell you what has impacted us, though. I hate to say it even more.
Yeah.
Has been the, what I call Trump impact, the Trump effect. Because the minute Donald Trump made it clear that he was not a supporter of South Africa, so a number of our international donors, and I'm talking about some big banks, European banks even, American donors in particular, overnight just simply dried up. The premise being that nobody wanted to be seen to be supporting a South African charity, despite the fact that we're not, you know, we're apolitical, and the work that we do, we're going to have to work with whatever government's in power. But it has necessarily impacted us materially.
I actually never thought about that, the extent to which your life must have changed post October the 7th. The environment must have just shifted 180 degrees, and must be so unbelievably challenging to operate in that environment, specifically outside of the community. Final question for you this afternoon, Mark. If you're looking ahead 10 or 20 years, what do you hope that Jewish giving is going to be looking like, I guess, both inside the community and out in the broader South African landscape?
Well, first and foremost, I think what has always identified us, you know, when we were not able as Jews to own assets, we always built around intellect. So from a, let's call it philanthropic perspective, I do honestly believe that, and I'm now talking outside just the community itself, but in initiatives like Africa Tikku, Norma Smile Foundation, we will use more and more of our intellect to be able to influence impact rather than necessarily having to be implementers ourselves. So we will still play a very vital role in bringing about relief to parts of the country where there's need. Within our own community, I have to be honest and tell you that I am seriously concerned. I do think what we're going to have to do is integrate, merge a number of organizations, communal organizations, collectively together, A, to cut costs out of the equation, and B, to find ways to optimize our impact, because I don't see the pool of capital available growing materially, not unless we've got a number of expats who are making pounds and dollars are, you know, convinced that they will give back on a continual basis, leaving legacy awards to help fund the community's needs here locally.
What an interesting space you play in. Mark Lubner, thank you so much for being with me on Chai FM. Definitely going to take you up on that cup of coffee.